With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders, Vault Dwellers, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. This is your host, Tom. We're robots, and what you are about to hear is something that I recorded with Lady Devon, who is the former community manager for Bethesda, for Fallout specifically. And we got together recently and asked a bunch of questions of people in our communities about the Fallout TV show and the questions that they had and the things they wanted to hear more about. And we dove in to those details. We answered some questions. We went over some of the a little bit more debated topics from the show. Get ready. It's going to be a lot of fun. We hope you enjoy.
For those of you guys who don't know, Tom is like the creator and founder of Robots Radio Network, which is this massive, massive podcast network for everything lore related for Bethesda, Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Starfield, doing incredible moves. And they just recently hit number one on podcasts for Apple Podcasts for leisure and for gaming entertainment, which is absolutely insane. So thank you, Tom, for talking to us. This is awesome. We're so honored to have you with us on here.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no pressure, I guess. This has been super exciting. And there's lots of shows on Robots Radio if you're interested in video games or even other things. There's lots of other creators. It's not just my stuff. And so go check it out if you're looking for podcast content. But if you're into Fallout lore, yeah, the TV show has absolutely exploded. And I guess I'm part of that because people are going, well, I'm going to look up Fallout podcasts, and then they stumble upon mine and the numbers have just skyrocketed. So that's amazing. So, yeah, I'm totally fine. I totally know all the lore in my head at all times and can answer every question without research.
I mean, you're essentially Emil, right?
right. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's intimidating to call you the lore master when there's such a plethora of lore out there, and there's so many channels that do cover it in depth like you do as well. And but like, I don't take that lightly. Like I very, very much value your opinion on everything Fallout. Like I personally, you know, I know how many thousands of hours I've put into these games, and I also know how horrible of a memory I have. I don't know what I had for dinner last night. So
I'm excited
to, I've got ideas and thoughts in my head about this show that I want to share, and some things that I don't quite remember from like earlier games and lore that I'm interested to hear your guys' opinions on.
Yeah.
First off, real quick, before we jump into all of our show discussions here, for my chat that's watching right now, pause. Thank you guys so much for the subscriptions. I don't mean to ignore you guys, but I thought I turned off my sound alert, so I apologize about the random Gary's and Skyrim level up sounds that are popping up here. But I do have alerts turned off. They should be turned off right now, so that way we can have an uninterrupted discussion. I will give you guys your thanks and your acknowledgments afterwards, but this way we can keep things, you know, on topic, on flow, like running smoothly and everything. You guys know I love you, and I'll love you later. But okay, so you know, we sourced some questions from you guys ahead of time before jumping into this discussion here. Tom and I created a Google document where you guys could submit your thoughts and questions and things you wanted us to discuss. So before we get into your guys' questions, first off, I thought we'd kick it off with talking about our general opinions on the show. Tom, if you want to lead us on here, like what did the show do well? How did you feel about it? And like, how do you feel it represented Fallout, the show, in a different media? Like,
yeah. Yeah. So I think first, very, very clearly, they have a love of the source material. This is something I've talked about a bit on my podcast. And one of the ways that so many other video game adaptations to shows or movies fail is that they decide to just make little changes here and there. You know, like,
yeah.
Like, well, let's just like imagine if the show was like, OK, here's a vault. There's a bunch of vault dwellers in the vault. And then we go, oh, cool. And then we zoom into the vault and everybody's wearing an orange jumpsuit. We'd be like, what? Wait, no. And they're like, yeah, they're kind of like prisoners, so let's put them in orange. And they're like, no, that's not how the games work. That's not how the lore works. Like, why would you just make a change for no reason? And I feel like we've gone through decades of these just kind of adaptations where they just seemingly make changes for no reason. And they've gone the complete other direction with that. They have exactly the right logos for things. The first scene, Devin, when... In the first episode, when we are actually in the vault and we can see the vault, you see like the little rooms, you see the way the walls are shaped, the windows, all of that stuff, and people are walking around. I had goosebumps.
I have goosebumps just now, like literally talking about it with you, because that was the very first thing that stood out to me is when you're watching the scenes, it's literally you are in the game itself, down to the structure of like the metal, the steel beams that are just like arched over the walls and everything, the placement of the posters, even the coloring and the design of the tiles on the floor. Like you could tell that not only the showrunners and the creators, but also like the prop and the set department, like you could tell they put the time into the games. Like they spent the time in there, they looked around. And if you pay close attention, especially when you get to like the town of Philly, there are actual like stands and signs and fonts that are straight out of the games that they just put right into the town. And it does something for me personally. I think that it takes that that love of the world and the Fallout and the care that all of the designers put into this whole creation. And they took it to the next level, and they really showed us that not only do they also love the source material, but they respect it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that happens when you are designing a show like this is you have these art boards, right? You have these sketches and these art boards, and they spend a significant amount of time with the art team and the prop team coming up with how they're actually going to make the props, what they should look like, where they should go, and all of that. I would imagine that this is probably a little bit easier because you can just take screenshots of the game and you could just be like, yeah, here are some signs you would see in a wasteland, you know, town. Here are a bunch of screenshots from the games. Let's just make those. It seems obvious. Another thing that really, really stood out to me was the power armor. And we saw power armor like get teased in like photos that leaked and these kinds of things. And then, of course, it shows up in the trailers. But there's a feeling I get watching the show and seeing situations with individuals interacting with other individuals in their power armor that it took what happens in the game and even increased it. It created a feeling where like everybody's been next to a really big human being before.
Yeah.
And maybe
in my case, everybody.
Right. For you, it's everybody. But like, you know, really big buff individual. Like imagine standing next to like a WWE wrestler, right? Like, and you just feel like, okay, this person is super intimidating simply because they're big. Not necessarily because they're angry, just because they're big. And that feeling is probably very similar to standing next to somebody in power armor, and the way they did it in the show just absolutely worked. And the fact that they could just move around, like it was so mobile. It was like,
it was surprisingly mobile. And I absolutely do the intimidation factor that reminds me specifically of the scene with Maximus at the very, it's towards the end of the season where he's sitting down. Jesus Christ, I'm so sorry. My alerts just went off and screeched in my ear. Especially the scene in particular where Maximus is having to return to the Brotherhood after having stolen the power armor. Mm-hmm. And he's got that knight that's just pacing around behind him silently, and the thuds of his heavy footsteps, the creaking of the metal. Just Maximus is like complete, like, terror of, you really get that sensation of, they could just grab my head and crush it like a, like an apple right now, or squish it like a grape, whatever is the better, you know, comparison right there, like they did earlier. And it, they give you that feel and that intimidation. And it works so well with the Brotherhood and who they are and that pride that they have. They are that egotistical, like very, you know, they view themselves as better than and better as better than everybody else in the Wasteland, clearly, because it's their job to, you know, steal technology from everybody else. They don't trust anybody. And they really got that through. I was so nervous about power armor representation in the game. It's iconic. It has to be in the show. It's iconic and it has to be in the show. And if it's not done right, it could ruin it. But they just, they did such a great job to it.
Yeah. It showed up more than I expected as well. Like, almost every episode there's power armor somewhere. Yeah,
there really is. And they made the movement so, so fluid and seamless, which I had to giggle at one moment. There is a scene where Maximus is sitting on the ground in his power armor and he starts acting like he's getting up, and then it cuts to him like standing. And I'm like, oh yeah, you could not lift that on your own. You had to do some movie magic right there.
All right, let's just cut this because it's probably super awkward. But even just from a lore standpoint, like the fact that, I mean, there's always going to be some part of the community. This is the world we live in now, where like everybody has a voice. And even if there's 1% of the community that's just super unhappy about something, they really make it known on the internet and they want to ruin everyone else's day. Right. This is kind of how it goes. This works for everything. This isn't just a Fallout thing. This is across all fandoms. And the fact that there are only a very small handful of things that people are even debating on that level is impressive to me.
It really is. Really is. And the things that the two main things that I've seen brought up frequently when it comes to the show and issues that people have with it are one, the Ghoul Serum, which we'll get to in a little bit, because we had a lot of people submit their thoughts and questions about that ahead of time. One, the Ghoul Serum, and then two, the I completely lost.
The Shady Sands?
Shady Sands, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. That was the other thing. Mm-hmm. Shady Sands. I have thoughts around this.
Yes. And, yes. Todd actually responded to a question from IGN. I saw a post today about that. Yeah.
I did. And I saw Renegade Outcast linked that to me earlier on Twitter. And I was so excited. I read through that article immediately. And it really cemented my thoughts that I have about this situation. Here, can I just like dive right into that?
Yeah,
part
let's talk about it.
Yeah, okay, let's dive right into the Shady Sands thing. So, the big discourse within the community, for those of you who aren't quite, you know, caught up on all of the social media back and forth here, is that in the show, they say that the destruction of Shady Sands happens at a particular time in the story. And it doesn't match up with what happens in New Vegas in the game. Like the timelines, the dates that they have just aren't quite the same.
2277, but then it's 2277 on the chalkboard, which is 4 years before 2281, which is when New Vegas takes place. And in New Vegas, there are clear references to Shady Sands still being there, to people communicating with people back in Shady Sands and all of that. So
yeah, we even have the president come through and he like comes in off of his vertebrate in New Vegas. He came from Shady Sands. So my theory on this is that throughout history, history is told by those who have survived to remember it and can retell it. And not every time the people who are surviving and retelling it are the ones who actually were the victims of, you know, what happened there. Like, humans are infallible. We get dates wrong all the time. If you look into our own history books, there are conflicting reports of like prominent things that have happened that, you know, they just don't add up. The dates don't add up. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that is going to be a plot device in season two. I think they're going to explore that. Because we already have hints of it a little bit earlier in the season where Maximus, for example, when Lucy's talking about the Great War itself, where, you know, the apocalypse, and she says it happened 200 years ago. He says, no, it happened like 20 years ago when I was a kid. What are you talking about? That just goes to show, one, the lack of education that he has, because obviously he was a child during this time and then got immediately inducted into the Brotherhood. So he's not going to really know the accurate history that's going on. He's going to know what they gave him and what they told him.
Right.
And as a child, and especially in a wasteland where there's not calendars laying around, nobody's really keeping track of too much on the day to day. It's easy to get those dates mixed up. And I think it's going to be a plot device because of that, because I think they purposely brought up those questions. Because you don't go into a franchise as large and as well established as Fallout, especially one that is so very specific to the dates and the timelines of events that happen in it. They've done interviews. The showrunners have talked about how they, you know, studied the source material and the histories. That's not an accident that you make, especially with something that is related to New Vegas in particular, which is such a huge fan favorite. Right. And people really, really have their eyes on that.
And
I think it's intentional.
And they've done a lot to showcase New Vegas in this. You have Mr. House show up. You, at the end of the show, you have pictures of New Vegas. And then the whole animated, like, pan out thing at the end of the episode shows the inside of New Vegas, and maybe something really bad happened. They're hinting at like a death claw got in or something, right?
Yeah.
So they've very specifically decided to showcase New Vegas as being absolutely part of this world, part of the show. And so why would you purposely decide to be, you know, oh, well, we're going to mess with it and change it when you didn't change so many other things? It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't track. And so I'm with you. I think that there is some misunderstanding about what the date was, or maybe the decline of the city begins in 2277, but the bomb actually dropped a few years later. There's so many different ways you could explain this. Also, I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but 2077 and 2277 are exactly 200 years apart. So that's a very easy kind of number to remember. And it very easily could be misunderstood or confused. Oh, this is, and the timeline, if you were to say that the bomb dropped in 2277, then the last set of bombs that was the Great War, being 200 years exactly from this bomb dropping, is a very convenient number. It's a lot easier to remember. And so maybe people mistook that over time. You know, like, there are so many explanations you can come up with for why that was the way it was.
Yeah. And absolutely, too, when you have like these factions that are all vying for power over everybody, too, they're going to have their own narrative and their own way of presenting things.
Yeah.
And they can control the history. They can control the education that's going around.
Right. Right. Actually, like imagine being in Vault 4. Vault 4 is where this shows up. Right. And then having gone through everything that Lucy goes through in that vault, would you trust those people to be accurate about everything? Or are they a little bit bonkers? No, they are not
absolutely
a reliable source, right?
Like, exactly. I mean, and like, even just look at, I think a big theme with the show and with the games in general is propaganda and the misinformation too. When it comes to, it's like the telephone game, you know, you tell one person one thing, and as it travels to another person and another person, another person, it changes and it envelops and it becomes something completely different by the time it reaches the last caller. Like, that information, especially history and dates in particular and numbers, when you look at a society that education isn't a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, vaults will have their schools. That's great. They've got their own, you know, system of education and things that they're teaching in there. But if you're somebody who's born on the surface, your education is real life practical survival skills. It's not on specific dates and
Shakespeare and Marlowe.
Like, if you're a survivor who was born on the surface after the war fell, you don't give off hell what happened. You don't care what happened, you know, even 20 years ago. You're just looking for your next, like, purified water that you can find. Like, you just are focused on today and surviving today. Mm-hmm. So I think that's definitely going to be something that they're going to explore. And I'm really excited to see where they take it.
Yeah, me too. Well, why don't we get to some of the questions? Because
we've got a bunch.
We've got a bunch to get through.
We do. Okay. So first off, we had a lot of really great thoughts that you guys had submitted to us. And even though we didn't show them up on screen or mention them on here, I feel like we did mention them verbally on this. For instance, a few notable things. Datanisis, he expressed that he has deep love for the show and that they did a wonderful job encapsulating so much of the game that he loves into it. And I really love that as well. Sovereign Solivagant had a similar similar feelings off of that too, adding on that they wish that there was more desolate exploration with a whole hour of Lucy exploring a desolate town in the desert with just ambient sounds, which I have a thought about that. One, I say, one, the writer in me says that's a lot of wasted dead earth space. But the creative content creator in me says, wow, what an opportunity for Amazon Prime to make a bunch of like TikTok shorts or like social media shorts of the characters. Just day in the life of a wastelander, you know? God, that would, that's, they really need to have like tiny shorts of like side characters and what they do.
Yeah.
I think that would just be so much fun.
I would imagine the desolate town, a whole episode of just wandering the wasteland would be a really tough pitch from an entertainment standpoint. They'd be like, well, what else is happening? And people might complain about it. Like, there's an episode of The Witcher 3, The Witcher 3, not the game, The Witcher, the show, in the third season where Ciri's just like wandering around in a desert for like the whole episode, and everyone was like, oh my god, that was the worst episode. So
yeah, they're like, what if they could do it in like a fun way? Like there's been a lot of TV shows throughout history where they have that filler episode where it's just fun world building and everything. Mm-hmm. If it's done right, it's great. Yeah. If it's not interesting enough and doesn't propel the story forward, then it is a snooze fest. And let's be real, if you're walking around in an irradiated wasteland where everything is dead and all the buildings are dust, that's not a lot. There's not a lot of entertainment.
Not a lot to look at. Yeah. Yeah.
Not a lot to look at there. Okay. So moving on to the questions that some of you guys have submitted. We saw a lot of questions about the ghoul serum and our feelings towards it.
Mm-hmm. I have a theory. Yes. About this.
Let's hear it.
So first of all, the show has very clearly established, like we were talking about before, that not everyone is educated, that everyone has a very limited worldview. Basically, everyone's their own unreliable narrator. And the scene that we see is the chicken guy giving the Brotherhood guy the serum. And then all of a sudden his foot just kind of heals and goes back. Right. And we're left with okay, what was that? And then it plays out longer. And then Lucy and Maximus run into him again. And then they talk to him and they understand what he's going through. And they go, oh, are you turning into a ghoul? This kind of thing. My sense of that is they pose the ghoul as the answer to the question, because that's all they know. They haven't, both of them, I don't think, have engaged in anything beyond human ghouls and wasteland monsters. I don't think either of them have engaged with super mutants yet. And super mutant makes more sense to me, because if all ghouls could just heal, then why are they falling apart? Why does the ghoul, why is he missing his nose, right? Why is Lucy's mom basically a skeleton at this point, sitting in a chair? If that was a thing, they would all be healing and they wouldn't look different than any other humans. And the only way you'd ever know is when they take wounds and then they heal up very quickly, right? My sense is that serum is some mysterious combination of FEV or something. Maybe it leaked out of the Enclave and that guy happened to get a hold of it, or might have been sent into the wasteland with some sort of mission to create more super mutants or something like that. And so instead of throwing a superhuman in a vat, this is super mutant not needing a vat. You just inject somebody, right?
Tom, this changes everything. If your theory that this is like kind of a version of the FEV virus, if that, you know, is explored in the story, that would solve everybody's questions about this. Like, that makes so much sense to me.
Yeah, and
like,
Captain Mal in chat, it says he turns mutant in season two. This is one of the things we know showrunners do is they plant things in one season to pay off in a later season. He survives, he escapes, the Brotherhood doesn't get him. You know he's going to show back up in season two, and he's going to be super mutant-fied or in the process of turning, right? Which is a wonderful way of teaching an audience that hasn't played the games what a super mutant is, because we can actually see him go through the transformation. And they already hinted at it with the scenes of the Enclave with the super mutant hand underneath the little on the gurney or whatever it was.
And-
right?
And we didn't see any super mutants
and
yet.
We didn't
other
see
than
super
that
mutants.
Hand, that would be such an epic reveal. He just goes and runs off. Like,
yeah.
He just had that serum. We don't know what else is going to be taking, like, what other changes are going to be happening in his body. And, like, oh, God, we have so many hints about the Enclave and the things that they were doing and the experiments that they were running. And this wouldn't be the first time that a faction has had somebody kind of like sneak off into the wasteland to do their own nefarious works in the name of that faction while not verbally being associated with them. Like there's secret agents almost in that, double agents in that fact. That I am shook, right? I am so obsessed with this idea. Holy shit, Tom. Yeah. I think you cracked the code.
I think
right
it's
there.
A misdirection, that's, right? And anybody who's up in arms and they're like, wait, that's not how ghouls work, blah, blah, blah. You're right. That's not how ghouls yeah. work. On purpose.
Exactly.
Like, yes, they
oh,
knew
my
that.
God, that's so brilliant. Oh, I did not even think about that fact. Like, you know, any take that I thought I had on that ghoul serum before is now gone because I'm 100% on the FEV train right there. That would be so amazing. Mm-hmm. So amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
oh
then,
my God.
And then there's scenes of him like in town trying to distribute his serums. And we think it's funny that the show does this a few times where they show something. And in the context of what we understand at that point, we go, oh, that's funny. And then later on, they reveal something else that makes us reevaluate what they said earlier. The thing yeah. with Maximus talking about when the bombs dropped, that we understand that later when we understand that a bomb actually did drop on Shady Sands. And so that's why he thought it was the end of the world. Right. Or Lucy saying something like, if I took the power core and totally decimated an entire community, my father would never. I couldn't reveal that to my father. He would not accept that, whatever. And then we find out that her father had done the same thing, basically decimated a community, right? These
exactly.
things play off. So if the chicken guy, we'll just call him the chicken guy, is in a scene where he's talking to passersby and saying, oh, well, here's the serum. It can do this and do that. And then he notices somebody with a problem with their foot. And then he goes, oh, it can heal your foot, too. We think it's a joke. We think it's snake
yeah.
oil. And he's just making crap up. No, that serum will do
he
all of those things because
yeah.
it will turn people into super mutants. So
that's it. Oh, my God. I absolutely I love Chicken Guy character. I think he's hilarious and so on brand for Fallout.
Yes.
And I really do love that fact. I did have a little bit of a weird like when the foot was lost. The character's name escapes me. Bald Ethan from Lost. The head.
Yeah. The scientist.
Yeah,
whatever
character.
The name was. Yeah.
I'm a horrible podcast person. I don't do research.
I'm so bad at remembering names. They just fall out of my brain. So. Yes.
I'm bad at real life names and faces. And like, is somebody I haven't personally met? God, no, it's gone. But yeah, that scene when he loses his foot and they put on Jim's limbs, like one,
right,
I
right.
loved that because it's such a Fallout-y joke of like, hey, Jim's selling you some new limbs here. To the style of the foot, like to me, it didn't really fit quite the Fallout design. Like I feel like if they would have gone to like Nate Perkypile and said, hey, we want a scene in this show where somebody's foot gets chopped off and it has to be replaced with a metal foot, how would you design it? I feel like it would have been a little bit more cohesive with that series, but it is a new thing mm-hmm. that they introduced to the show. So I'm not mad about it.
Right.
But when they're walking down the town and he's shouting at them, like, I got a serum that'll regrow your whole foot. Like, it's so double layered in that comedy and the fact of like, one, you're like, oh, this chicken fucker over here is just trying to like make some quick sales and like,
right.
you know, he's lying because he's just trying to.
Yeah, of course, it's snake oil. It's just like everything in our world
oil.
Today still where people are like, yeah, if you take this combination of vitamins and whatever, it'll do all these different things. And it's like, no, it won't. That's a clear
no,
sign
it
that it's like it's fake. But in this case,
yeah,
it actually does.
It gave me the Aqua Cura vibes, you know, from Fallout 3, where you've got the ghouls that are selling purified water to each other and they're like, it'll heal everything.
Right.
And it's literally just water.
Right.
I absolutely love that. Not only did they make, not only was that they used it as a joke and a reference into that Fallout humor, but it was also a payoff in the end when he comes back with that serum. And then the audience is like, oh, shit, Chicken Fucker actually is actually telling the truth in some sense here.
Yeah, yeah.
I absolutely love that. I did see a comment in the chat here that I wanted to bring up that I thought was brilliant. Tenokai says, could it also be the mutation serums too?
They're all kind of connected, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe he's mutating into something other than a super mutant, but
it could be possible. Like, I like that thought too, because, you know, we have the Scorched at 76 that don't show up in any other game, but canonically in the world at this point in time, Scorched are, they exist, you know, they should be around, if they've escaped Appalachia.
Right.
But, one thing that like players really wanted with 76 was having physical changes to your character's body when they use a mutation serum. And like the hopeful in me wants to believe that maybe the showrunners saw that and were like, okay, let's actually give somebody a serum in the show that changes them in a physical way like that. Mm-hmm. That's a good thought. I do like that thought about mutation serums, because it is something that we had in 76 that canonically should exist at this point in time, story-wise in Fallout, but we haven't seen it in the other games. So I'm interested to see if they pull that into the show.
Yeah, I think if given the opportunity to either do, well, this is just a mutation serum and it maybe has this one effect, or this is some sort of crazy mutation thing where he can become anything, like a Snallygaster or whatever, or it's a super mutant. The opportunity for storytelling works best if he becomes something like a super mutant, because then you can follow that up. So I think from a writing perspective, that gives them more opportunity than him just showing up later and going, well, now I just heal every time I get hurt. Like,
right now, if I go, my nose is gone. Like, I do think that, it being like a ghoul serum, quote unquote, I don't want to say lazy writing. I hate that phrase because it's very offensive to me as a writer also, because there is no such thing as lazy writing. But I think it does, having that be an FEV serum does open up so many more story opportunities right there. I really hope they bring Nightkin into this.
Yeah, that would be cool.
You know?
That'd be cool. I mean, they could have, there's so many things that they just haven't even covered yet. They've covered so many things, but there are so many things they haven't.
Yeah.
And assuming that this show continues to do well, there could be 5, 6, 7 seasons of this. So
I can see it. Yeah.
So you could step it through with like introduction to ghouls and mutated monsters, which they did with this one, introduction to actual super mutants, and then take that a step further. Super mutants that it can turn invisible, you know, Nightkin or whatever else. And like you could continue. I just knocked over my mic. You could continue to add more. They don't need to drop it all at once, right? Like Death Claws, they barely hinted at Death Claws in this with a skull, right? So there's so much else they can do.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
All right, sorry to jump in here. I think I just punched my microphone. We have to take a quick break. We have to do the mid break and welcome. There are a whole bunch of new patrons who have signed up due to the popularity of the TV show and more people discovering this podcast. So we got to shout everybody out, and we've got some reviews that came in that I need to read as well. So here we go. Welcome to Christoph W, Bob M, Dio, Spencer W, Brad S, Joshua L, Jessica G, Damien. I always have to debate whether I want to say the last name or not. Is it a made up name? Is it not? Well, I'll just err on the side of caution here. Vault 420. Nice. That basic zombie dude, Dustin B, Michael M, or I'm sorry, Michael N, Cameron S, which one's pink? Donald J, and Irregular History Buff. Thank you so much for signing up. I'm so glad that you're all here. I hope you're enjoying the ad-free episodes or the stickers and t-shirts you'll be getting, or joining us for patron chats coming up. We have one next week on, normally we do those on Tuesday night, but they're currently voting. Our patrons are currently voting on the Patreon between Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, which is the 30th and the 1st. So get in there and vote if you are somebody who can join us, if you're a Saltron tier or higher. And then also I have to shout out our Sentry bots every week, Germinator and also Pluto. Thank you so much for your support as well. All 101 of our active patrons, thank you so much for being here. Also, we got some new reviews in that I need to read out for everybody. So buckle up for this one. I'll try to get through these as fast as I possibly can. This one comes from Nuka Pretzel in the United States, who says, my favorite podcast, by far my favorite podcast I listen to. No other podcast makes me want to listen through every older episode, sometimes more than once, quite like the Fallout Lorecast. I've been listening for over a year and it never gets old hearing new and old Fallout stories of lore and even just thoughts on different topics in the Fallout universe that means so much to so many of us. Huge thanks to Robots and everyone else who was hosted, guest hosted, and helped out in general with this amazing treat for the ears. Thanks, Nuka. Then we have Zero PKK, I think is how you pronounce it, from the US, who writes, absolutely the best. Started listening about a week ago and I'm 53 episodes in. This podcast actually convinced me to give Fallout 76 a second chance and now I'm hooked. I've played the game since Fallout 3 came out and it's one of my favorite game series. The lore has always fascinated me with this game, and now I get to hear it. I wish I would have found this podcast sooner. Robots is an amazing host who dives into the lore and has excellent explanations and can't talk very well on what is going on in the Fallout universe. Can't wait to binge the 200 plus episodes to catch up. Would give 10 stars if I could. Keep fighting the good fight. We'll update when I get caught up. Thank you so much for that one. And then username token from Canada writes, exactly what I was looking for. With the TV show coming out, I've just gotten back into the whole Fallout vibe, replaying games, watching videos, and now podcast. 10 out of 10. Very happy to have found this pod. Thanks, username. Then we have one from Quintero66 in the United States, who writes, one of my favorite podcasts. This is an amazing podcast. I work as a cart pusher for Walmart, and these podcasts get me through some of the hottest days of the year. Just hearing the opening jingle warms my heart because I know I'm in for something great. Keep up the good work and fighting the good fight. Well, thanks, and good luck with the cart pushing in the heat. We've got two more left. This one's from Brandon Hall in the US, who writes, great lore podcast. This show is definitely the best way to learn about Fallout lore, combining the lore with comedy and occasional mindless banter. I think that's a compliment. Really makes the information accessible and keeps you coming back. Thank you, robots, for the great work. Then we have, thanks for that, Brandon, 111223 in the US, who writes, that's a very interesting name. Elite content. I am 3 episodes in after getting rehooked on Fallout again after the TV show came out. I dusted off my old Xbox and I'm currently running through New Vegas again for nostalgia. If you're anything like me and you want to live in the world, even though you're not playing, this is the podcast for you. I think that's an exact like explanation for the show, is like trying to get you that feeling of being in Fallout, even when you can't be playing Fallout. So, all right, everybody, thank you for your support. Thanks for being here. It's kind of a long mid break, but I appreciate it. And I hope you're enjoying this episode. There's a bunch more still. So enjoy.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
I feel like this show, if it can take kind of a Game of Thrones kind of slow burn, I think it'll have a much bigger payoff in towards later seasons. Because if you think about long-running shows like that, where they have multiple different factions and countries and things like that involved, the first season is basically just all planting the seeds for everything else that comes along with it. And there are so many seeds in Fallout lore to plant there.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to some more user submitted questions here.
My mic stand just broke. That's so weird. All right, I'm just gonna hold it while we talk.
It's not powerful enough to handle your enthusiasm on this show.
Weird. All right.
All right, let's see here. So let's move on to some questions about the characters that people had submitted here. Renegade Outcast asked us, many facets of the Brotherhood of Steel have been shown throughout Fallout's history. How does Fallout Prime's rendition of the legendary faction compare to the previous representations, in your opinion? I'll start off on that one.
Go ahead.
I just have a comment on this, which is the responses that we had submitted to us were so perfect. Half of the responses were like, I don't like the Brotherhood, and I think that they were represented weird because that's not how I really viewed them. And then there's other people who are like, yeah, that is 100% the right, Brotherhood. Right. But the people who also were like, I don't like the Brotherhood because of XYZ factors, the reasons that they listed were the ways that they were portrayed in the show. So I honestly, I think they did take it a little heavy on the zealot side of the Brotherhood of Steel, but that's so appropriate for West Coast Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Because if you look in the games, the further east you get, the less they start caring about the rules and being, you know, like reporting back and, right. and you right. know, having that, especially like in 76 when we had that Steel Dawn DLC that came out. We've got that's a whole part of the conflict is them being like, we don't really believe what these guys out west are telling us. Like, we're not really supportive of what they're saying. We just like all this armor and stuff.
Yeah. So there's a theory that I have about the way that we have been conditioned to deal with organizations in our current world. And it's the idea that we treat companies, organizations, whatever, like individuals. So for example, like you go, let's say you go to the Waffle House down the road and you get a really poorly, you know, cooked plate of eggs or whatever. And you're just like, oh, Waffle House sucks. I'm never going back to a Waffle House ever again. You're yeah. holding that one experience by that one chef who just didn't make a good plate of eggs against an entire organization, as if that organization as a whole is an individual who's going to make that same mistake over and over again. Make sense?
Yeah.
We do this all the time. We treat organizations like they're people. And so this is one of those things that people do in games as well. Well, the Brotherhood of Steel is X. No, the Brotherhood of Steel has principles, but the way they follow through with those principles completely depends on who the leadership is in the moment. We see this, for example, across the Fallout games. In Fallout 1, the Brotherhood acts a certain way. By Fallout 3, Lion's Brotherhood is very different. They're much more accepting and open. By the time we get to Fallout 4, they're a very different group, you know, like because the leadership has changed, right? So the Brotherhood as an organization simply has tenets and potential to act on those beliefs and tenets in certain directions. The way they do that is completely dependent on the individuals who make up the organization. So everybody's right. You can say, well, that's not how the Brotherhood would act, because you're right. Maybe Lion's Brotherhood wouldn't act like that. But you can also say that's exactly how the Brotherhood would act, because under certain leadership, that is exactly how the Brotherhood would act, right? So it's a spectrum. It's not just a single answer. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think everybody's right about that. But we just need to kind of zoom out a little bit more and understand that the decisions they make and the where they go is a spectrum. It would be, here's another example. You can't just say, well, in this situation, the United States will always do X. What time period? Under what leadership?
Yeah.
Who was the president at the time? Right? Like, our policies change all the time. We are not an individual who sticks to one type of plan and does. And in fact, individuals change. Like, that's the other thing, is that most of the time, maybe somebody does a certain thing, but there might be situations where they don't, because people make choices, right? Like,
they change, they expand, they grow.
Right, right. So
it's like
we do this thing where we just pigeonhole everything into like these simple explanations, but that's not the way anything actually works.
We want things to be black and white, but it's all shades of gray.
Absolutely.
You know? It really is.
And if any other series has absolutely dealt with that, it's Fallout. Fallout is basically everything is always gray. There's never a white and there's never a black. And then for us to engage with the series and go, well, no, I want my black and white, we're missing the point. It's gray.
Exactly.
Everything's always gray. So
It's all gray.
So that's my perspective on it. So there you go.
I love that. Moving on to a very specific character question. I did not know that this was a theory running around on the internet until this was presented to us. Lexa Blackheart asks, what are your thoughts on Moldaver?
Yeah, it's a strange name. Moldaver? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Molly and Rose being a couple, and that Molly did everything she did for Rose and to honor her memory? What are your thoughts on Moldaver and Rose being a couple, and that Moldaver did everything she did for Rose?
I think it got duplicated.
To honor her memory. Yeah. I love that.
That could be a thing. I don't know that there's anything that they showed that defines it from a very strong friendship to a actual romantic relationship. It could be either of those. I think both of those are possibilities, but I don't think either thing is specifically confirmed.
I think that if there was a romantic moment between Molly, so I don't butcher her name more, between Molly and Rose, I absolutely think that it did happen when Rose left the vault and she was with her kids in Shady Sands. And to me, that would make a great catalyst to Rose's dad bombing Shady Sands. You know, not only did his wife leave the safety of the vault that he helped create and manage and oversee, like that is his, it's not just his home. She didn't just leave the house, you know, she left the entire vault, and she took his kids too, her kids also. But like, you know, there's that theory to it. And he goes out of the vault, sees her in Shady Sands. If, you know, she also, maybe he's not the best husband and maybe she's not happy. And then maybe Moldy comes around and, you know, they feel a little something there. I think that having that sexual tension and the betrayal of leaving with the betrayal of cheating on top of that, I think that would absolutely be a great catalyst to Lucy's dad being like, you know what, fuck all of you guys, I'm gonna hit the button.
I think you're right. I think that very, very well could be a justification. I don't know that it's a necessary justification, but it's a very possible justification for sure.
Absolutely. I definitely see it being a possibility, and I wouldn't write that off. I would be really interested to see them explore that as a subplot in a future season too. Okay, another question back to Molly. Dumplet had asked, do you think that Lee Molly was inside Vault 31? That's why she hasn't aged. And the follow-up question, do you think Maximus is a synth?
Yeah, do you have any theories about why she hasn't aged?
I do think she was in Vault 31. Mm-hmm. I do. I don't know why, how she left just yet. I gotta look for some more context clues throughout my second rewatch of it there. But yeah, no, I absolutely think that she was in Vault 31. And taking it further, I think that Cooper, the ghouls, I think his wife is also in Vault 31. I don't think his daughter's there, though.
Yeah,
I
don't know.
I know there's some theories of people saying that maybe his daughter also is in the vault, or maybe she's also a ghoul now or anything. I think she died. I don't think she her tiny little child body was going to survive those radiation blasts as strongly as Cooper did when it happened.
Yeah. So we leave off with them on a horse running from the bombs. So if she made it into a vault, then she must have been, like, maybe he knew where to go to, like, and the vault was close enough that he could try to get in, but they took her and they didn't take him or something like that, right? There's also questions about if his wife knew that the bombs were dropping and Vault Tech was behind it and they dropped the bombs, then why would he have allowed her to be with the girl when she would have been in danger of that? Rather than saying, no, your visitation is canceled for today, I can't explain why, and then running off with her or something, right? Because they were clearly divorced by that point. So there are some fuzzy details around that. But as for the, was she in Vault 31? I think so. I think that the fact that she worked on some of the tech and had some connections, I think was enough to get her into the vault. And how she woke up again and got out, we don't know. But there were a number of those pods that were open, and people weren't in them. So where did some of those people go? It leaves a lot of opportunity. Now, is Maximus a synth? I've heard that going around. I don't think so, because
I don't think so.
He would have been replaced as a child or given false childhood memories. And I don't know that he needs to be any more complex than he's somebody who grew up in a terrible situation, joined the Brotherhood because he's looking for meaning in his life. I think that that's plenty and fine. Now, do other people become, like, get revealed as synths at some point? Probably. In fact, they may have already hinted at some of them, and we're just not thinking beyond some of the main characters. So I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Real quick, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just wanted to pause and say thank you all the raiders who just came in. I'm so sorry the alerts are off right now. I have no idea why the sounds are still going off. So thank you for everybody following. If you're wondering why you keep hearing a sound, thank you. That's you.
You did that.
I honestly have no idea where my sounds are coming from. So that's on me. Sorry about that. Well, there goes your clean use of the audio for yourself, Tom. Good luck with editing.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Actually, I'm just capturing you and me, so I don't have the stream audio.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's
so you don't
even
have to
better.
Worry about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you guys again. I will catch up on all the alerts after we are done talking with Tom here. But we're going to keep moving because we're almost to the end of our hour and we still have so much to cover. Tom, I know you saw the questions that I had gathered ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you want to like really quick start like talk about or answer that you saw?
Renegade Outcast has a question about the Enclave, or a comment here with a question. The Enclave had a brief representation in season one showing off the creation of cyborg dogs, experiments on super mutants, and of course the recreation of the cold fusion particle from the pre-war era. What would you like to see from them in season two, and how far would you like them, the showrunners, to go in terms of crimes against humanity? Okay, so what do I want to see from them in season two? I think that they've hinted at a lot of things about the Enclave in the first season that we were left very unsure of after the events of Fallout 3 and Fallout 4. One of the questions we've discussed on the Fallout Lorecast is, like, are the Enclave still out there? If they are, where are they? What are they doing? And I think the answer to that is a resounding absolutely, they are. And the fact that Wilzig knows things about Lucy and what's going on in that specific vault leads me to believe that not only was he filled in on that information, but they might actually have direct access to data from the vaults, which was one of those things that I think has always been speculated about and maybe even connects to very specific vaults. But I might go as far as to say as every vault, that there is probably still some sort of central location. It wasn't necessarily the oil rig. It was some other location that has not been revealed yet that is somehow tied in to data from every vault that still is operational. And I think that may be something that we get more about. I think we might get more about who exactly was part of the Enclave and who exactly. One of the things they talk about with all of these different corporations and the whole, you know, Vault-Tec was in with Repcon and Robco and all of these. And we had the talking heads and the table doing the thing. But one of the things they mentioned in one of the earlier episodes is how somebody used to be at this one company, but now they work for this company. And this idea that there's cross-pollination that was happening like the decade before the Great War. And so you have not just, oh, this political person happens to have connections at Vault-Tec, but no, this was somebody who was like a senior level manager who is also a politician. Like I think the connections are even stronger than we may have assumed, and the amount of information they have is stronger, and their ability to continue doing experiments and collecting data and fulfilling some of the vault experiments that we still don't know about is still happening. Yeah. So I think there's a whole lot of opportunity for that stuff. What do you think?
I personally think that the Enclave is going to be a much bigger focus in season two. They've laid so many seeds down, and so they've started up so many questions that we really need those answers to. And in the show, you know, as you're saying, we see the connections between politicians and Vault-Tec. And if you look at Enclave at its core, it is the collection of the U.S. Congress, the senators, like the high up politicians in the United States. And they were supposed to take over and be the new America, be the new rulers. Vault-Tec has their own idea of how those things are going on. But we're also in a capitalist society where everybody wants a piece of the pie. So it makes absolute sense to me that the Enclave and Vault-Tec would also be related. Because if you think about Vault-Tec, you know, we have the big reveal at the end of the show. By the way, spoilers, if you guys are just joining in, we are full spoiler zone here. we see that Vault-Tec is the one that dropped the bombs themselves, because it is more profitable for them to actually have the war happen than for peace negotiations.
Well, we know that they were considering it.
Yes.
But we don't necessarily have confirmation that they specifically did it. In fact, they may have been willing to do it, and then it happened before they expected, as might be evident by the fact that Cooper has his daughter with him when it happens.
Yeah, that's a good clarification there. We're led to kind of assume or think and that Vault-Tec may be the one responsible for the bombs drop, but you're right, we don't have that specific clarification.
Right.
But looking at it from that perspective of Vault-Tec saying, you know, this would be more profitable for us, like we will control the world and we'll control all the economics and the businesses and everything, and you guys have power over that, I can absolutely see the United States government being like, you know what? Yeah, let's hit the reset button and make sure that we actually have that absolute total power. And also, you know, taking part in the vaults too. And maybe they commissioned a few vaults from Vault Tech. I could absolutely see the Enclave being like, hey, let's have a vault with virtual reality to train our soldiers. Yeah, better. Sure. You know, like yeah. There's so many applications that Vault Tech has that also coincide with the U.S. government. Obviously, West Tech, we know that they're involved with Vault Tech. We see them at those big heads at the table. I think season two is I think they're setting us up for a season two that shows more of that deeper connection between the Enclave and Vault Tech there.
Yeah, I think the Enclave will be the overarching arc. Well, that's redundant, isn't it? Of the entire show, I think we're going to get, you know, like this is the who is Vault Tech? What was actually going on when the, you know, in the pre-war? How has that affected people? This is an intro to the Wasteland. This is an intro to Vaults. I think the next season is going to be something like here's when we're returning to New Vegas or something like that, where we're getting a little bit more about House and what House has been up to and how he affected things beyond just what we learned in New Vegas. And so it's going to open up that and like, what are death claws and these kinds of things? But like the overall arc, I think the actual real villains are the Enclave, and that's going to come to a head a few seasons later. At least that's what I would predict right now.
Yeah. I think the show has done such a great job at being a fan service already, and there's such a thirst and a desire from the Fallout community for more Enclave content. There's so many things that we don't know about them that hasn't been established or explored in the games, and especially with New Vegas being such a fan favorite and the ending scene basically showing us like, hey, this is coming in the next season.
Yeah.
I fully believe that maybe the writers, the showrunners are also big fans of New Vegas and that fan servicey aspect, and because they're fans and that's what they want to see, I feel like that's what they're going to bring us in this next season too.
Right You know what I haven't noticed in here too much is, I mean, there are a few questions about the NCR, but real quick we could discuss the NCR. I think some of the questions around that are like, oh, is the NCR still around? What's going, if they were if Shady Sands was bombed, how do you lose a capital and are you still there? One of the hints about that is the information about the bounty on the head coming from all six locations or something. There's a word they use, all six boroughs or something like this. I think that is a reference to the still existing locations that the NCR is across the Western United States. I'm pretty sure they're still out there. They're just not in the LA region because Shady Sands got blown up.
The agencies, the agencies. That's a great thought. That's something that, you know, I just, my brain just kind of washed over that while watching the show. You're right. The Ghoul does references six agencies and just kind of leaves it at that. And the show doesn't explore that more. So I am curious. That's right. I wonder if they'll talk about who these agencies are. Clearly, it's some kind of facility that has the ability to communicate to different factions and different people all across the Wasteland.
Right.
That's an interesting.
It implies some sort of overarching structure that connects a bunch of different locations, like the NCR might be. And we know that those locations communicate back and forth, that there's still contact between them in New Vegas. Like in my head, that's the explanation. I can't see another explanation for why that would even make sense. But it also means that there are still towns like Philly that are just unincorporated.
Yeah.
Because they're just
kind of like their own independent thing.
Right. Like the NCR isn't that much of a presence in this part of the world anymore. But if you head a little bit east, I bet they are. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we're running at the end of our hour here with Tom. I know your schedule's really busy today. Do you have to head off of here soon, or
I can hang out for just a little bit longer, but then I have to go. But is there anything else here you wanted to discuss before we wrap it up?
Oh, let me pull through these questions here real quick, because there was a couple ones that were, or there was one. That I kind of wanted to bring up on here. You know, let's go. Let's do some of the fun questions that were popped in that weren't necessarily lore heavy or show related, but more of opinions. Chaz Wowza asked, which of the three main protagonists, Lucy, Maximus, and the ghoul, do you think you could beat in a fight?
Jeez. None of them.
Oh, I could take Maximus hands down.
You think so?
Absolutely.
He's scrappy. He gets back up when he gets knocked down. Like the scene where they're trying to take the power armor from him. Remember, he's trying to fix the power armor, and he goes up against five different people, and they clock him real good. He gets back up, and he just like he doesn't know to stop. That is dangerous. That in a fight is dangerous because like not knowing when you're down means they're just going to keep coming at you. So,
I don't know though. We asked another question for our viewers, which was if they could assign special stats to the three main characters, what would they do? And we only got two responses back, but the two that we got just made me cackle so hard because both people said that Maximus has like such a low intelligence and such a low charisma and just straight up luck. Just straight luck. Like, One Jason the Elder said, Maximus forgot to pick his stats, so he's running around with a one in every slot. And Chaz Wowza says that Maximus is playing with Idiot Savant. And I'm like, I'm so here for it. He's such a dummy. I love it. It makes sense, you know? But that's why I think I could beat him in a fight.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you take the power armor away, like everybody else is beating up on him. Like, he's true. A strong dude. He could take the guys that were beating the crap out of him at the Brotherhood of Steel, clearly from taking down those guys who were trying to steal his power armor. I'd throw some sand in his eyes, sweep his legs out from under him.
Sweep the leg. You know? Yeah.
Sweep the legs out. I'd play dirty.
Yeah.
Throw a mole rat at his face.
Here, have a mole rat.
Surprise.
he's a wonderful character though to create an arc with. Like,
he has so much room for growth.
Season one, he's a dummy. He has no experience in the world. Barely the wasteland, even doesn't really know how anything's supposed to work. He's just kind of looking for meaning in his life. And now they're setting him up to be a very important character in the Brotherhood. And I think we're going to see him have to like we saw the origins of it. This idea that like he was given the opportunity to sit back and watch TV and eat popcorn. And then he sees Lucy having problems and he's like, all right, I'm stealing the power core. We're doing this.
He's like, all right, here we go.
I got to give up the popcorn, but OK.
Already showing that growth. Yeah,
right. We're seeing a glimpse of where he's going to be. And I have a feeling he's going to be in some very important situations and he's going to be a leader at some point, and he will have to make hard decisions, and we're going to see that play out. And so we'll see the growth of his character, and I think his stats, just like playing the game, he's going to level up, and his stats are going to improve, you know? So,
absolutely. Which speaking of the special stats, Lucy 100% is a luck build. Like, she is just so lucky that everything that happens to her and Maximus too, but I am very excited to see his character growth. With him and Lucy in particular, there were some their chemistry on the scene, on film and everything there on the screen. God, I can't talk. Their chemistry and their kind of like interactions with each other, to me, they felt strange. But it feels weird, and it doesn't feel like it should work that way, but it also at the same time makes so much sense because of who they are as characters. Like, you know, Lucy, at first I was kind of thrown back by Lucy's just like, do you want to have sex? And he's like, what?
Doesn't even know what that is. Yeah, right.
He has no idea what it is. And I did a lot of thinking about this because at first it kind of bothered me, Lucy's kind of like attitude towards sex. Because, you know, theoretically coming from a vault that's 1950s, like she's going to have more of that conservative like view off of things. But at the same time, they go right into like, we do incest, like within the first five minutes of the episode.
Well, so, I think it's very specific to that vault. They they are conditioned from birth that they might be selected to get a partner from another vault, and then they are expected to procreate. That's it.
Exactly.
That's it.
And so, it could be a very sex positive vault because of that.
Right.
And,
right. I don't think there's any taboo about that at all. There's just like, this is a thing our bodies do. And eventually you have to take a husband or a wife and then you have kids. And that's just how this works. And so they're very frank and upfront about it, which totally tracks in the situation with Maximus. And then he's just confused because he doesn't even know how any of that stuff works.
Yeah.
But
and it does make sense, too. Like, I think at first I'm so used to seeing like media portray sex in a specific way, especially, you know, as a woman, I always pay attention to how sexuality is presented on camera and on film and on TV. And at first it felt like there was that disconnect. But the deeper you look into her characters, it does make sense. Maximus, at first, I was bothered by him not understanding what sex was, because I'm like, you've been living with like a bunch of dudes and like all that testosterone running around and like they're beating the crap out of each other. You think they're not going to talk about sex? But at the same time, they are zealots. And he says, too, like, you know, I'm a knight. We're not supposed to do that. So it does make more sense for me on that. I just wish the lines and the delivery, I feel like the pace, the timing and the pacing of them just could have been set up a little bit more differently.
I think it was supposed to just feel awkward because that's what it felt like for them. Like we were supposed to feel like they did in that moment and just be like,
exactly.
Oh God.
And that's totally fine. If it's supposed to make you feel awkward, it worked. It made me feel so awkward, but it was also fun. You know, I mean, it gives you a chuckle. All that. 16-Bitten says, does that hint towards him being a synth? I don't think Maximus is a synth. We've seen him as a child. But yeah, that's I am curious to see how their relationship plays out, because clearly Maximus is now going to have a like that different pull. Like, is he going to live with Lucy in the vault after all this is over, or is he now going to step up into his brotherhood knightdom and take over and jump into that? I do have one theory about Maximus that I want to share before we have to
do
say
it.
Goodbye to you and let you go on with
what
your day.
What is it?
So my theory is that Maximus actually is out to destroy the Brotherhood. I have a theory that maybe Maximus believes, or maybe the Brotherhood were the ones who destroyed Shady Sands, and maybe it wasn't Lucy's dad, and he just didn't clarify in that moment. But I have a theory that Maximus views the Brotherhood as kind of like this evil entity of something that, not evil necessarily. I feel like he had to go with them. Obviously, he had no other choice when his home was destroyed. But every time he says, I want to hurt the people that hurt me, it flashes to that knight in power armor.
Right.
And if you see the way that he treats the other squires, aside from Dane, his friend, everybody else, that he keeps them at a distance. You know, he's not letting them close. And I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah, no, I think there's going to be some sort of arc there for sure. I think he will either be the thing that destroys them or is the salvation of them in a way that pulls them back to something that's a little bit more moderate and less extreme. But they could go in all sorts of directions with him, which is kind of fun at this point because we don't really know.
They really could. Yeah. Some in chat now, Benjen says planted memories. His childhood absolutely could be a planted memory.
We talked maybe about this early on in the idea that he would have to have implanted memories if he is a synth. But like, I don't know. I think that in some ways turns him into a character more than what he needs to be for the story to work. They talked about how this show, they kept coming back to a vault dweller, a member of the Brotherhood, and a ghoul. And to then take one of those and go, and they're also a synth, is a level of abstraction that's unnecessary for those main characters. But like I said earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the other characters that we see in the show that are like these side characters are absolutely synths, that, you know, maybe even some of the other recruits from the Brotherhood that we see, like, oh, well, that guy ended up being a synth, or somebody working one of the shops, you know, like the girl who was repairing the stuff and, you know, Maximus had to sell his teeth to go get
I'll
it
give
fixed.
You an extra cap. And she just does it in 3 seconds. And he's like, you mother.
Right. Yeah. Like some of those characters, you know, like maybe some of them are synths and they come back later or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or even plants in the vaults. Maybe the synths somehow got implanted people in the vaults somehow or something. I don't know. They could do a lot still, I think, with that.
Yeah, I do agree that having Maximus as a synth would be a little bit too much for the audience, especially since they're not just marketing this towards people who have played Fallout before, but now they want this to reach a whole new level of fandom that the game hasn't seen. And with Fallout in itself, you have to have a certain level of suspension of disbelief anyways, because otherwise we could go around and around all day talking about, you know, why can Lucy just use her stim pack when she gets stabbed, but then when Dane gets a razor to his leg, why is that the sorry you can't do this anymore when they have that technology? Like, we could absolutely just dance around all the different, like, the sciences and everything behind it, but making Maximus into a synth, I think, would be too much of that for the audience.
It also, your main characters, you typically want to be the kinds of characters that the audience can identify with. Everybody knows what it's like to be a Lucy who goes from one comfortable situation to a situation where you feel like you're an alien and you don't understand what's going on. Everybody understands what it's like to be somebody like Cooper, the ghoul, and to lose something that means so much to you that you persist for 200 years trying to get it back, you know.
Exactly. Become that jaded, like...
Right. And just like Maximus, everybody knows what it's like to long for meaning and acceptance in your life. And to then take that and remove it a step from... and make him no longer human alienates the audience from being able to identify with that. And I'm not sure that's a step they'll take.
I agree. I agree completely. And I do think that Maximus is kind of like dopey, kind of himbo-y portrayal too, is super important to that character growth for the audience to relate to him more. I feel like he's kind of the, even though Lucy is the ignorant, fresh-eyed, fresh-faced person out of the vault seeing this world for the first time, I feel like Maximus really is the audience representation of somebody viewing the show for the first time and seeing, like, what all of this is about.
Right.
Because he's starting off with that innocent, like, I don't understand how anything is working. And then, you know, hopefully down the line in future seasons, he'll be somebody that the audience is like, I'm a Maximus, you know?
Yeah, I think he's going to grow on people. Also, you stating that turned a light bulb on in my brain. They are both ignorant in completely opposite ways. Lucy is ignorant about the wasteland. Maximus is ignorant about all the things that she would have learned in the vault, which was like the history about of the country, about how people work, about like all of that stuff, right? So they're completely opposite ignorant. And so they together balance that out for each other, which is why, like, and some people complained about, like, did they have to make it romantic, whatever? No, I think it totally makes sense. They are the balance for the other person. They complete each other in a way that is very fundamental to who they are. And so it makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, two lost souls are going to find each other, especially in a wasteland like this. They've already had so many circumstances that brought them together in ways that they didn't even expect that they would need each other. And so it completely makes sense to me that there would be that romantic tension building up.
And on top of it, they've already blown the whole, like, well, we should just have sex. And what even is that? That moment is going to go from awkward and casual, probably within a few seasons, to a situation where it is actually romantic and meaningful.
That's going to be like I'm calling it right now. There's going to be like a huge buildup of them not having time alone with each other. And then when they finally do, it's going to be like
And it's going to mean something. It's not just going to be like, oh, we're bored, let's just pass the time by doing something that's pleasurable. It's going to be like,
exactly,
I've missed you. I'm so glad that you're back. Like, there's going to be some sort of meaning there, which
I think it's also going to explode and be the kind of scene that you shouldn't actually watch on TV. Pun intended. Explode. Wah, wah, wah. Wah, wah. You know, he's a 60-minute man. I'm calling it.
Oh, boy. Wow. All right. Man, there's definitely going to be some fanfics about this stuff.
Oh, I guarantee you, Tumblr probably already has a bunch of those jokes already.
Oh, man.
There's so many innuendos.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, Devin, this was super fun. I'm so glad that we got to do this and talk about all these cool things and be here with the community and see people's questions and people in chat. Thank you so much for being a part of this. But I'm running out of time. I got to get going.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm so happy that we got to have you on the show for the time that we did. Let's do this more often. And God, just absolutely, you're amazing. We'll put a shout out for you guys, for you in the chat. For those of you guys who joined in off of those raids, this is Tom from Robots Radio. He's the creator, founder, and everything of Robots Radio, the amazing podcast network that is all things Bethesda lore.
Yeah, and the Fallout Lorecast. So go check it out.
You should absolutely check out the Fallout Lorecast. They're in year 5 right now. Just hit number 1 on Apple Podcasts on so many different charts. They're making some big moves. So make sure you guys give him a follow.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been super fun. I hope the rest of your stream goes awesome. And I'll see you all in the wasteland, I guess.
Thanks. Bye, Tom.
Bye. See you later.
To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.